animals fleeing in terror from things beyond description.
Who are you?
My name is Mike Hammer, if it matters.
What do you want?
He was out to get men who tortured women and killed with the ferocity of wild beasts. This was their jungle.
Cut the knife!
Kiss Me Deadly stars Ralph Meeker, winner of the New York Critics Award. Through his great talent, the vivid character of Mike Hammer comes to life as never before.
They came last night, right after you left. I heard them. I hid in the basement.
Only a woman could help him solve the murderous riddle of Kiss Me Deadly.
She's dead. But I'm not dead. Hey, remember me?
This woman's lips, cold as steel, lethal as a gun, gave him the terrifying clue he sought. On this woman's lips, warm with longing, lay the shocking secret of Kiss Me Deadly.
We're two pioneers of the night.
Song Kiss Me Deadly by Lita Ford.
Good job.
And it also matches the title of the movie we're discussing. Mm. There was also a Billy Idol's first band, Generation X, had a good song called Kiss Me Deadly.
Kiss Me Deadly.
I'm Bob Sham.
I'm Angela.
And this is Movie Humpers. The sounds here may be dogs, and all month long is our theme, the left hand endeavor. That means classic film noir all month long. And today's selection is quite an interesting one. It is the third most recent noir we are going to be discussing today. That's right. I don't think anything we discuss when it's all said and done is more recent than 1964, I want to say. I think that is the most recent one we will be discussing.
And this is 55?
Five, yes. Directed by Robert Aldrich, written by A.I. Bezzarides, and based on some characters by Mickey Spillane, however way you pronounce that.
Mickey Spillane
did not like
how
much was changed of his character of Mike Hammer. Mickey Spillane was one of maybe the biggest author in his prime during this time.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was selling a lot of books, right off the racks. So.
Oh, yeah, a lot of pulp.
And Mike Hammer, that character, he's just kind of an oaf. He's gruff. He's rough around the edges. Yeah. He's like an 80s action movie protagonist before, like a post-Reagan reactionary character before we really even got one.
He's scuzzier than most of our guys that we will see.
You know, that
we're seeing this month.
You know, I think the most famous one when it's all said and done and looking back is probably the Philip Marlowe character, the Raymond Chandler character. And a lot of guys you'll see are almost stand-ins for that type of a character, just in variety of ages. But like Marlowe, you know, you can tell he's been through it. He's seen some things, maybe done a few things he's not proud of. But there's always some kind of streak of honesty.
He has his own moral code.
Yes. There's a little bit of that Gary Cooper in there, you know. Yeah. There's a little bit of that. And I think what's interesting about the Mike Hammer character is, like, you don't get a feel for that at all. He almost seems like an oaf. I don't know if he's that good at being a detective. Because it just seems like once Trouble realizes he's involved in their shit, it just comes to him.
Yeah, well, you know, I would say there is a good detective in this movie, and her name is Velda, and she is his assistant/secretary.
Yes, that's right.
She finds all the names, she meets all the people.
And FWB as well, right?
But they haven't really... Oh, yes. Definitely. They haven't really done any sort of case like this in the past. They very much do one person thinks their husband or wife is cheating, and then they go and pretend to date them and get photos.
The real typical private eye thing. You're just following people to hotel rooms and shit.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, this one just finds him. He's driving down the road and
he sees a woman, her arms stretched out. You see her above my head there.
Yeah, she's
Cloris fucking Leachman is who that is. Yes.
Very young Cloris Leachman.
Her first feature film, Cloris Leachman. She will always, everything you see her in will have a tinge of sadness.
I'm just thinking how much you can tell about a person from such simple things. Your car, for instance.
Now, what kind of a message does it send you?
You have only one real, lasting love.
Now, who could that be?
You. You're one of those self-indulgent males who thinks about nothing but his clothes, his car, himself. But you do push-ups every morning just to keep your belly hard.
You against good health or something?
I could tolerate flabby muscles in a man and make him more friendly. You're the kind of a person who never gives in a relationship. Only takes.
Cloris Leachman is playing Christina Bailey. And this Christina Bailey has seen some shit, but she can't tell old Mike.
No, but she says to him, can he just take her to the bus stop? And at one point she says, if we don't make it to the bus stop, remember me.
Remember me.
And he's like, we're going to make it to the bus stop. And she's like, cool. If you make it to the bus stop, you can forget about me. But if we don't, remember me. Like, she's...
His car, he basically gets cut off, and he gets... A lot of the action, the abrupt action kind of occurs off screen.
Yeah.
Not even off scene, but almost like the camera, it like moves just beyond the camera and happens.
You like might hear something, and then you see someone fall, but you didn't actually see... the contact made.
So there's a little bit of his car kind of goes off road, and then it cuts to him knocked out on the floor of a fucking cabin, and we see her legs dangling, but she's being murdered, mm-hmm. strangled, killed. And, you know, the Hays Code definitely is going to prevent directly showing that in a U.S. film, but there's something just particularly creepy and scary about the way that they did shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some shots and the approaches here that feels so really interesting and refreshing. There's mounted camera shots on the cars as it's pulling in.
Yeah, there's some really cool good stuff.
He gets shoved into a car unconscious and she's dead, and they push the car off the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up in a hospital bed, right?
Yeah, 3 days later, Velda's there. She kisses him. You think, is this his girlfriend? No.
No, I don't think Mike Hammer feels love. I don't think he feels love.
No, I think Mike Hammer uses people for whatever he needs in that moment.
You're the kind of a person who never gives in a relationship. Who only takes.
I don't think he's completely unsoft, but it's hard to tell if he's like looking for revenge on behalf of Christina or if he's just fucking annoyed that someone clubbed him over the head.
I think it's more he needs to know the answers. It's a curiosity. And I do think that he has like affection for Velda. I think when he's with her in that moment, he's there. But when he's not or he has another thought, he just like switches to that completely.
He's kissed like he kisses at least three different women. Yeah.
And she can even tell like he'll shift his body and she knows like, oh, he's not with me anymore, you know? Yeah. And it's like this unspoken thing. I thought she did a very good job in this movie. I really liked her and their like chemistry.
So he kind of bowls his way through. He's got this friend who's like a Greek mechanic guy, mm-hmm. who's very boisterous and loud.
Mikey! I'm the Mikey! Hey, Sammy, look, my friend just returned from the grave.
Hey, Mike.
Mama, boom.
This guy is like a Labrador retriever. Like, he's just at a 10 excited every time he sees you.
Mikey, Manga! Mikey.
People know he's bald, so he's being followed. He's being followed on the streets, and he bangs this guy's head against the wall. And we watch him beat this guy. We think he's bashed his head in, but then the mm-hmm. guy gets up, and he's throwing him down some steps, muscling every guy they put in his way.
Yeah, and he basically gets told, hey, we need you to forget about this, and to make nice, we messed up your car, so you'll have a present in front of your house tomorrow.
Him and his Greek friend show up, and he's like, check out the engine there. And they look it up. Sure enough, there's a bomb strapped to the starter, and he unhooks it, and then he's able to drive the bomb off. So he knows they're trying to kill him, so he does track the goon. There is some kind of mob kind of thing going on, and he literally goes to the dude's house while they're playing out in the yard, and they've got babes out by the pool. He just shows up, walks in, starts looking.
Making out with his sister.
Lightweight of the race. And jockey.
How do you do, ma'am?
Skin diver. How do I do? Dudley Carroll. Glass crazy. Number 3 with Jerry Percy.
Victoria Shout follows under the handling of Peter Buteri. Black Rocket number 5 written by Dave.
Yeah, that's right. Sister. That's right.
She invites him into the house.
And she's just looking around. I don't think the guy, she even like gives a fuck about anyone else there either. It didn't appear so. He starts looking all around the house. And that's when the guy steps up. Basically, he's like, you tried to blow me up. And the guy doesn't deny it. But there's somebody else that he's working for, that he's under, that he's moving for. And they're all looking for something that the Klorsch Leachman character knew about.
Yeah.
And the police are looking too, and they're like fucking assholes.
And I think this is the point in which the story diverges. I don't know how much of it matches ahead of that, but the novel, the original story, was all like mafia based. So you could see this guy being like part of this family, and you got it. I mean, they kind of did have that.
He loses his gun like early on.
He usually has a gun. He loses his gun. And then the main story of this was actually, yeah, surrounding this like mafia situation. But in this movie, everyone's looking for something, and this item they're looking for is not in the book at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with it.
So it's just pretty much a whole different Mike Hammer story.
Up a new story and used the name.
He goes to where Christina Bailey was staying, and this man tells him to go to some place where her roommate should be.
Yeah.
And that's when he meets Lily Carver, is played by Gabby Rogers.
Right.
Now, Gabby Rogers is very interesting. We kind of were split on her performance or how she presented herself. There's something kind of like off about her, though. That's like, she might be one of my favorite femme fatales this month.
She was scared. She was more and more scared. She was afraid to go out. She go to the movies once in a while, or out for groceries, but never very far. Then the police came around. They asked questions, lots of questions. Then they took her away. After a while, I had a feeling someone was watching the place. And those men came.
Yeah.
And it looks kind of campy, her performance, but she almost just seems like she's definitely one of the weirdest femme fatale we will see. Almost.
You know, yes. And you know, I just came up with a theory that would make me like her more, because what my problem with her is that she just seemed like she didn't know what was going on ever. And I couldn't tell if she thought she was doing something or if she was just a space cadet, you know, like I just couldn't tell. But if you think about it like that, if you think about like her mood swings and what we find out about her more towards the end of this movie, like she seemed to me as though she would have been the one who escaped from the insane asylum.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe she did.
She's like,
and that makes me like it more. That like makes me get it more.
She almost seems like the most accessible in her oddness, her craziness. Yeah. Like someone like a Rita Hayworth almost is like you're seeing her from far away. She glows too bright, you know?
Oh yeah.
It doesn't feel accessible, but this one, I wanted her to just throw out a line that's like, I cut my own hair, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Mike does kiss her. I mean, he's got to kiss all of them.
Well, she kisses him. And he doesn't really want to kiss her.
She's a little too crazy. Crazy
from
good
her
pussy,
once he thought she didn't know anything, he didn't have anything to really gain from her. He was just protecting her.
Right.
And I don't think that he... Yeah, I think maybe a little too crazy. Like, this girl would be in love with him if he did anything with her.
Yeah. But you know what they say about crazy.
Yeah.
Am I right, fellas?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, she's just floating around. And there's a man with, like, I mean, it's black and white, but a man wearing blue shoes. And we see fancy shoes. His lady, his assistant, his fuck buddy, Velda Wakeman. She's doing a lot more legwork, it feels like. He's just getting in fist fights, and people are coming to him and being like, back off, Mike.
Yep.
And he's just kind of stumbling his way through the case. But she's the one that's like, okay, I will essentially be escort detective, and I'll talk to this art dealer.
Carl Avello, you know, but Dr. Soberin, does that do anything for you? This Joker says there's a new art in the world, and this doctor's starting a collection.
What kind of a collection?
I don't know. He tried to date me.
She says at some point that there's a new kind of art that's being collected. And I don't know if that's like code or what.
Like abstract or something.
Yeah, so, but then you think like, oh, are they looking for art? You know, is this some super valuable stolen thing maybe?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
But no, it's not. Everyone's just kind of webbed into.
I think it was just another way to like get you off on.
Some kind of smuggled item or something.
Oh, they kill his friend.
That's right. The mechanic, the guy with the shoes
man kills him.
And they make it like you don't see the guy in the shoe with the shoes face, but maybe he was more famous at the time, but he's just, I don't recognize him. I'm sure he's a famous character actor or something, but I don't recognize him. So it seemed odd that he was like a mystery sight and then it's on him and it's just this guy, right?
Yeah.
Most people don't know that Spider-Man is Peter Parker, right? So if a villain gets the drop on Spider-Man, and I guess he could take a picture, and he takes his mask off, he's going to be like, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So take a picture, I guess, if you knock out Spider-Man and take his mask off. So Velda ends up getting kidnapped because she's having to throw pussy around to get some information.
Yeah.
And Mike's pimping her out.
With a few drinks and one thing leading to another, I suppose I could get some more information about the doctor. Do you want me to date him? Well?
Well, what?
Well, what do you think?
I think I'd like to get my hands on whoever killed Nick.
You want to avenge the death of your dear friend? How touching. How sweet. How nicely it justifies your quest for the great Watson.
He's the pimp detective.
He basically is. And she's trying to always make him jealous about it. He's not forcing her to do any of this. She's doing it essentially for him. But, I mean, and obviously she's an employee, so she's getting paid. But she does kind of want to make him jealous. Like, she's like, do you really want me to go and, like, date this guy? Yeah. Do you really want me to date him? And he basically doesn't give a shit unless, like we said, unless he can get something from you in that moment. He's on to the next thing, and he actually doesn't care what you do when you're not around him, as long as you're available to him when you are.
Right.
Or whenever he wants you.
He's a user, basically.
He totally is, literally with everyone. He even has like a, yeah, it's insane, but he has like a cop friend that you think is his friend.
Yeah, but they're dicks, the whole cops are. They even give him the kind of, in the beginning, the, like, your methods are rough and violent, right?
She was a cute kid, had the nicest way of needling a guy. There'll be a long pause before those characters get a line on who killed her.
Law isn't fast enough. You could do it a lot better. Is that it? Now, look, Mike. Who do you think you are?
Two other things happen before we get, like, kind of to the end of this movie. One is he keeps thinking, like, what is this remember me thing? And so he basically is like, she didn't have anything on her. She was, like, naked wearing a trench coat. He was like, I got to go see her dead body.
And Velda is kidnapped as well. So he has at least got enough soft spot to want to free her.
Yeah. So he goes, and the morgue guy is a real dick, a douchebag in this. Like,
well, it's like it's a riddle. And he waits for him to solve the riddle to be like, yes, she swallowed the thing you're looking for.
Oh, my God. And so he's like, give me the fucking thing.
And he's like, I want like a lot of money for this. Like, he's shy.
So Mike like breaks all his fingers and gets the key and figures out that it's to this athletic club locker, and he opens it, and there's this box inside a box.
Yeah.
And at this point we're like, what is it?
Yeah. What is in this box? Really excited at this point, right?
I know.
And so he opens the box. I mean, it's like a box in a box, and he opens the interior box, and a light comes out, and he shuts it.
But he's burned.
And it burns his wrist. And so he locks it back up and just tells the guy who runs the joint, like,
I never was here.
I was never here. Don't open this box. Don't ever take it out. Don't let anyone take it.
Mm-mm.
So he takes off and the police catch up with him. And the cop notices he's got a burn on his wrist.
Yeah.
And then and then he's like, what's up with that box? And then the police know, the detective know, and he's like,
now listen, Mike. Listen carefully. I'm going to pronounce a few words. They're harmless words. Just a bunch of letters scrambled together. But their meaning is very important. Try to understand what they mean. Manhattan Project, Los Alamos, Trinity.
Yeah, he actually says Manhattan Project.
Manhattan Project.
What was the third one?
Kaboom, boom, boom. No. You get it? You get it?
They're so not unrelated words.
Well, he's just trying to remove himself.
But it's like a room full of people acting like he's talking in code.
Everyone else is another cop, though.
I know, but still, it just seemed weird. Like, why do you got to speak in codes? But I guess, yeah, he didn't want to say he ever said it.
So, yeah, we're in a nuclear age story.
Yeah.
Now, he's been helping hide out Lily Carver, Christina's old roommate.
Mm-hmm.
But she takes off at some point.
What kind of an investigation you're running around here anyway? Lily Carver, Christina Bailey's roommate.
We fished Carver's body out of the harbor over a week ago. You're so bright, working on your own, you penny-ante gumshoe. You thought you saw something big and you tried to horn in. What about this dame who's passing herself off as Carver?
And he goes to get the box again, but it's gone.
It's gone. And then he's desperate to find Velda. He doesn't know where the box is. And so he goes to the art dealer
who she was like romancing.
And he basically is like, where the fuck is Velda? What is the deal? Who are the people?
That guy knocks him out on sleeping pills. So himself out on sleeping pills. So he doesn't have to answer
which
questions.
Which is crazy. I thought he was killing himself, but he started snoring. And I was like, okay, that's actually like.
But interesting decisions in this movie. But then Mike sees the prescription with the doctor's name on it, and he remembers that it was the name that Velda got from this guy.
Yeah, so he calls it, and the answering service straight up is like, he's at his cottage house, like, telling people where people are. Anyway.
So he
somehow gets their beach house.
The detective reveals that Lily Carver's body was actually found fairly recently.
Yeah, so this is not Lily Carver that you've been helping.
Come on, we all knew this crazy lady, crazy good pussy, was not going to be like that.
Gabrielle
was her real name, as it's revealed as we see her in the room with the doctor guy with the nice shoes who killed his Greek friend, and they're talking.
Whatever is in that box, it must be very precious. So many people have died for it.
Yes, it is very precious.
I want half.
I agree with you. You should have at least half. You deserve it. For all the creature comforts you've given me. But unfortunately, the object in this box cannot be divided.
Then I'll take it all.
I want it all! And she pulls the gun out and shoots the guy who very slowly and melodramatically dies.
Very slowly dies. Oh, and he's also like, I'll tell you where to take it. Just don't open it. And then he dies before telling her where to take it.
Yeah.
And she immediately is like, I'm fucking opening this shit.
But my camera gets loose just in time to witness her open it.
And she shoots Mike.
Yeah. Oh, right. She does shoot him.
She shoots Mike. And then she opens the box and it's shining so bright on her, she bursts into flames.
It's like when, like in Let the Right One In, when light hits the vampire and they burst into flames.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. And you can see like a mannequin like burning as the camera's pulling back on that, which is kind of funny. But, I mean, I'm not complaining. We're watching people get shot and there's no blood. Yeah, that's just the time, right?
And Mike finds Velda and gets her, and they run off into the water as the house literally explodes.
Yeah.
Another thing we found out post-movie, on the Criterion collection that we have,
Criterion DVD,
there is a alternate ending. So this, the ending with them getting away was the original ending. And then that ending was lost for a long time because it was re-edited so that you never saw Mike and Velda leave the house. It just ended on the house burning. And so it was very much more like apocalyptic. That ending, without them getting away, without it just being that the house blew up, has put this movie into the realm of science fiction.
Right.
Because this thing opening, like, what the fuck was in that box?
Right.
Is it something radioactive? Is it something yet to be discovered? Is it a portal to hell?
Now, you know, American culture's wrapping its head around, you know, fairly recent, and wrapping its head around its own country's nuclear capability, what that means. A lot of science fiction and horror at this time is coming off of that kind of Cold War nuclear era kind of shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know much about how radioactive plutonium and shit like that works, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to burn you immediately like a vampire. You'll probably just start getting very sick and red, like, after a few weeks. I think that's more like what happens, or like after a few days. But this posits that this thing that they have is so strong that it will immediately just destroy you, the whole house, and everything. And it almost implies that it's something even worse than what they alluded,
like, this now came from. Now that it's been released. I mean, because, you know, like you said, he calls her Pandora. Like, they literally call it Pandora's box. I mean, if Pandora's box is open, I think it is apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing.
Does it stop at the burning of this house? Is this thing? Because it ends right at that point, but you could almost assume, like in Oppenheimer, before they tested that bomb, right? You remember that they were like, there was, mathematically, they had deduced that there was like a very small percentage chance that there could be some kind of trigger in the atmosphere that could literally destroy, turn the whole earth into like a burning ball.
Well, and seemingly whatever this thing is can be contained, but as soon as air hits it, it becomes something that can catch you on fire. And if that's the case, then exposed to air, it could just burn up the whole building, the whole world.
We don't know, you know, a lot of these movies I haven't seen before, but I feel like if I had known more about what this end plot was going to be, I would have put it more at the end.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of sit here and imagine that this thing, like, it just didn't go away. It hit the air. It could have destroyed all of Los Angeles, as far as we know.
Yeah.
We only see them watching that house explode while they're standing in the water, hoping the water will keep them safe. But that's might not be the case. As far as we know, all of Los Angeles got destroyed by this little object that just expanded as it kept hitting the air. And so that is kind of a cool little thing. It has this feeling like it's leaving this prime era of this popular genre and heading into, you know, something different, a new era in American history and how entertainment interprets what's going on with its own culture in film.
I feel like the ending of it feels to me very Hitchcock. Esque.
Well, there's,
you know, like the mystery of not knowing.
Well, there's the movie Notorious with Ingrid Bergman and Cary Grant, where, and that's a little bit, that's older than this movie, where they were talking about like there were nuclear secrets and stuff. And apparently the government questioned Hitchcock because there was just kind of so much that seemed to be
too much correct.
Too much that seemed to be on point with stuff that was going on.
Oh my God.
But that Los Alamos project, that whole scene, a lot of ladles in the soup. It's not surprising if information got around.
For sure.
But yeah, this movie ended up being, you know, I didn't know much about it before we watched it, but this movie is extremely influential.
Yeah, there's, you know, just
the glowing box MacGuffin alone.
Yeah, so that's been Pulp Fiction. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. It also inspired like a whole wave of French filmmaking as well.
Yeah. Godard and another filmmaker I was reading about had both quoted it as being the American film most influential to the French New Wave cinema.
Yeah. Which, interesting. We are going to watch I think it's going to be a French one from 64. That will be our most recent film noir we will discuss. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it's Godard. It might be Melville. I can't remember. But yes, Kiss Me Deadly. Such a interesting, such a different story. This, Mike Hammer character felt almost a little too ahead of his time in the worst way. much more of a modern, almost like from our, like an 80s protagonist.
Yeah.
That's kind of more lethal and sticks his dick in everything and doesn't really give a fuck about anything. A very reactionary type character.
Mm-hmm.
But he also may have just been destroyed along with Los Angeles by this box. Who knows? Who knows? So, a fascinating ass movie. There's some parts in it that feel so strange, so different from some of the other noir that we might be discussing.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways it feels so experimental. Like even the femme fatales are almost a little off here.
Yeah.
And, but they still kind of come around, reach into that climactic point of desperation that you see in so many film noir, resulting in, everyone being destroyed by the future itself.
Yeah.
Kiss Me Deadly. Kiss Me Deadly, 1955, directed by Robert Aldrich. Let's rate it 1 through 5 each combined.
Yes.
What do you give it?
I am going to give this movie a 3.75.
I felt at least a 4, and mm-hmm. I feel like the craziness of it was so much fun. I'm going to give it a 4.25. So that puts it right at an 8. It's in league with things like Dracula, Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
Crimes of the Future. House. It Follows. Manhunter. Prince of Darkness, the John Carpenter movie. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of 8s in here. Some solid, solid movies. Easy A's. Kiss Me Deadly. This is a memorable one. I think I would love to revisit this down the road before too long. But it's I highly recommend. The influences here are super interesting. So check the show notes for links, other places to find us. The Left Hand Endeavor will roll on. We're just getting started. A whole other half month to go. And like, subscribe, corrections, compliments, fun facts. Lay it on me. What do you think about this movie, Kiss Me Deadly, starring Mickey Spillane, Mike Hammer? All right, let's get out of here. More all month long, huh?
Yeah, see? Kiss all this day, tell me.